the great things that are working are when we allow students to learn from their sense of purpose, when we focus on essential skills, and not essential skills like the very simple reading, writing, and arithmetic, but those essential skills that we know students need for their 2050, not our 1950.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to Learning Unboxed. As always, I am excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And joining us today is Kapono Siaute, CEO and president of the Pacific American Foundation Peak School Distinction and co-author of The Landscape Model of Learning. Welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be here with you.
The privilege is mine. And I'm really, really excited. You have had a fascinating career. So super, super interesting. As we set the context just a little bit for our listeners as we get started here, the PEAK model ensures that students develop purpose, focus on essential skills and mindsets, experience agency, and foster deep retained knowledge because we believe the future of education lies in students developing three sets of peak human traits: adaptability and resilience, belonging and empathy, and creativity and critical thinking. And I don't know anybody who doesn't want that for their kids. So thank you for that. I think to add to that, though, to really sort of help folks truly understand, explain to us not just the PEAK model, but about the Pacific American Foundation and sort of the why, if you will.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to go back one step to my personal why. My personal why comes from, well, one, I'll credit my parents. They were both educators, and I really appreciate that. The second part of my personal why comes from the fact that I had the good fortune of being the main character of my own education when I was young. I went to a really fun, happiest place on earth school here in Honolulu, Hawaii, where I'm from and where I'm currently living. And I had the blessing of being the Jason Bourne of my action film.
I love that.
And, you know, when I went away from elementary school, experienced why my brothers and I all went to the same school. And, you know, we talked about why do kids in movies not like going to school? And we really came to this idea that at a certain point, most schools, as a student, you're just an extra in the film that is your English teacher's action movie or your social studies teacher's drama or whatever it is. And I think that idea of being a protagonist, being the main character of your own education, I had that good fortune. I would then add to it that the idea that as a school leader, I wanted to spend so much of my time on school transformation that allowed for purpose, for agency, for, you know, transferable applied knowledge for, you know, our students to make the world a better place. But, you know, having led both independent and publicly funded charter schools and international schools, so much of what you're measured on, what you have to put out to the public, is very small amounts of what I believe true learning is. So at its essence, the PEAK model, you kind of explained what it aspires to. The value add, the newness, well, what I hope we're able to bring to schools through it is the opportunity to have a third-party, nonprofit, respected educational organization help a school system, district reflect on what they're doing well that is not yet captured in standardized tests, and be able to provide that school or school system with a third-party, reputable, nonprofit distinction as to so they can help celebrate to their community that they're doing it well. And so if I were to tell the story of PEAK and PEAK school distinction, that's what it would be.
And I love that. And thank you for setting the stage with us with your own sort of superpower journey. I love that too, right? I don't think I've had a guest come on and explain to me that they were the Jason Bourne of their own story, right? So that's pretty awesome. So help us sort of one step back, I guess, again, before we move forward with really digging into the weeds here, then. So why peak? Like, where did that come from? Help my listeners really understand the specific origin of the sort of the model influence that you're really trying to get at here.
The genesis of the work was sprouted from the work of What School Could Be, founded by and championed by Ted Dennersmith, co-founders Sir Ken Robinson and Tony Wagner. So really the three of them as this really high-level educational thinkers founded What School Could Be. Ted, in his multi-year journey around the United States looking at what was working when education, came up with that acronym, PEAK. I will tell you, as an educator, an educational leader, I have this weird loathing for educational acronyms, specifically alliteration in education. I feel like so many publishers, companies throws alliteration at us as a way for them to sell products. PEAK, I like, because it's an imperfect acronym. The purpose works, the essential skills works, the agency works, and then deep retained and applied knowledge, the K. So I appreciate that it's imperfect because I don't like when we make the C work just because we need three C's or five R's or 17 L's.
Right.
the genesis of it came from Ted's multi-year journey around the United States, mm-hmm. seeing what is working because, I'm an amazing fan and follower of Learning Unboxed. I think that you are able to celebrate. You guys have found really cool things that are working.
Mm-hmm.
PEAK was Ted's synthesis and genesis of everything that was working out there. The great things that are working are when we allow students to learn from their sense of purpose, when we focus on essential skills, and not essential skills like the very simple reading, writing, and arithmetic, but those essential skills that we know students need for their 2050, not our 1950. Student agency, as we write about a landscape model of learning, is key to this. We want every student to feel like they're main protagonist of their own action film, and that when knowledge is deep, retained, and applied, it's learning that's meaningful.
Absolutely, 100%. And I appreciate you bringing that forward because you're right. We do believe deeply, right, in the students being able to own their journey and just putting students at the very center of all this crazy work that we are doing or that we are aspiring to doing or that the adults in the room said we should be doing, right, to hand it back over and to allow those students to have that space to own that narrative. Deeply, deeply meaningful. And I would argue transformative, and not just transformative for the child or even the community, but transformative for all the adults that support that child. So I just think just an amazing way for us to go.
Can I just add something really quickly on the transformative part? Because it was interesting. Like, I use that word in relation to PEAK, and I'm appreciative that you kind of gleaned it from it and have uplifted it. I'm sure that people listening to this podcast, educators, educational leaders, supporters of education, the type of listener that's tuning in, I'm assuming is at least mildly interested in transformation of our educational system, which is why why you subscribe to Learning Unboxed. And just today, I was talking to Elizabeth Johnson, who is our lead of the PEAK distinction process, around how I think post-COVID, maybe that's an excuse. Maybe educational bureaucracy, maybe that's more of what it is. Maybe a standardized testing regime, maybe old parent pressure. I don't know. A combination of that is really keeping lots of educators from having the bandwidth to engage in transformation. I'm feeling like today people are so exhausted, distracted, exhausted somewhere in there. And yeah, I love transformation, Capono. It sounds amazing. Yeah, I listened to Learning Unboxed, some really cool transformation stories. And now it's time to transform our own schools. Oh man, we got so many things we need to do. So I guess two things. One is I hope people remain hopeful. Maybe three things. I hope people remain hopeful. Two, I think many of the educators you've been able to feature, and I hope also PEAK, me and my colleagues have been able to bring forward are helpful in what we say with in our transformation model, small steps that lead to profound change. That we can do this when we lean into very small steps that can do this. And then three, I think there is an urgency to do it. I think that the Titanic that is public education in the United States has hit the iceberg. I think the tip of the iceberg that has breached the hull is AI and what AI is bringing to schools, positive, negative, amazing, hopeful, threatening, all of that. But that's just the tip of the iceberg, and that tip is floating on a much deeper iceberg of social change, social justice, environmental, climate change and environmental justice, lots of other things that are floating this iceberg, even though I do think that the tip of it that people are seeing right now pierce the hull of education is AI and what it's the change that it's very quickly bringing to what we're doing.
You know, I love that you bring up AI. It's one of my favorite topics these days, in part because everybody wants to talk about it, right? You know, and here's the thing about it for me. We had the same conversation. It's interesting, right? Because you have educators and you have thought leaders that are like, oh my gosh, this is absolutely amazing. And it has the potential to be a transforming agent, right? If you will. But then you also have the backlash, right? That's always going to come. It's an inevitable sort of scenario, I think, that's playing out. But it makes me chuckle a little bit because I remember the conversations when the internet showed up in schools. Yep. And oh my gosh, right? You know, kids are going to cheat. It's going to be undermine everything that we're going to do. What do you need the teachers for? I mean, why? It's the same conversation, right? All over again.
It is. I would quote a good friend of mine and founder of World Leadership School, Ross Wenner. And he inspired me and questions us or inspires us as educators to consider education being humans, teaching humans to be human. And then ask that question. I would add, so what is the role of technology in AI? If it can assist us in doing that, and it can, then let's embrace it. I have seen recently, I just recently came off of a 10 years head of school of the American International School in Egypt. So I get marketed a lot of things from software companies and publishers. And it's interesting to see the new alliance between software companies and publishers. The great question of how do you commoditize data of children under 18? You know, companies know how to commoditize our adult data. They're really, really good at that. How do you do that for kids under 18? Companies are starting to figure it out. And the great, huge publishing companies of the world that know that their selling of knowledge pre-digested and pre-packaged is threatened by this great, you know, divesting of information. And the power that I think AI and the internet internet and AI in that order is bringing to knowledge access, which is super exciting. And you see these huge publishing companies acquiring student assessment companies. Won't throw out names, but you know, one huge merger recently. And you can see where the frontier of commoditizing student data is, student assessment data, how that plays straight into knowledge acquisition and content. And you can see this like pipeline of assessment content, which is really cool when put in the hands of amazing educators who see how that could be useful and then save time and open up channels for students to be able to truly impact the world, make the world a better place, and become protagonists of their own story, have purpose, lead with agency. And then also excruciatingly terrifying. And I will tell you that I have had conversations with superintendents that are leaning into the marketing of, man, you can't find enough good teachers out there, superintendent. Mm-hmm. This is the next frontier to replace them. And those conversations are not backroom secret conversations happening. They're conversations that are actively happening right now, which is terrifying on that end, but I hope also really inspiring on the, we listeners of Learning Unboxed, practitioners of Peak, readers of Landscape Model Learning need to lean in and figure out how we use and leverage AI.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
Absolutely, 100%. And there's so many incredible opportunities tied to it if we will literally just think about it and embrace it, give them a try. I agree with that. Appreciate that very much. So share with us then a little bit about the Pacific America Foundation, right? Because I can guarantee you if I don't ask this question, somebody's going to send me a note and say, I don't get that part. So could you help us understand that piece? And then we'll dig into just a little bit of the weeds about like what specifically are you doing and how are you doing it?
Yep. So the Pacific American Foundation is pushing into its next 30 years after having 30 years in Hawaii and the Pacific nonprofit. And I'll tell you the very quick story. When I was a teacher, classroom teacher, over a decade and a half, one of my students, his mom was doing curriculum writing for the Pacific American Foundation. And she called me and said, you know, Kapono, we'd really appreciate your help. We have a huge federal grant to do this really neat curricular piece. Would you mind being a junior curricular writer? And this was almost 20 years ago, basically, shy of a few months. And started doing that, met a educational mentor of mine. There's, you know, three or four people that have really led me on my educational path. Auntie Verly Ann Molina Wright, Hawaiian kupuna, Native Hawaiian kupuna. Kupuna is elder in our Hawaiian language. She really mentored me in my educational journey, one of several people, one of a few people, a small handful of people. And about 10 years ago, she had a conversation with me and a conversation with the outgoing executive director, CEO of Pacific American Foundation separately, told us each separately that when Herb, the outgoing CEO, decided to retire, that I was to take over. But right before then, she said, "And Kapono, you will get your PhD. You have no choice in the matter." You know, 7 years later, I'd gotten my PhD. And this was a little over 10 years ago that conversation happened. The CEO conversation happened. And Herb called and said it was time to retire. The interesting twist to the story might sound a little bit more brutal than it actually is. Auntie Verly is... She's my elder bully. She's definitely a good indigenous elder bully. She made this decision. She told everybody and then did what she knew she needed to do, is that she very peacefully passed away. So nobody could undo her decision. So this has been kind of the path that's been determined for us in our community. I'm really privileged to be leading up the Pacific American Foundation. While our locus of work is in the Pacific, PEAK is certainly not just a Pacific initiative. Actually, interestingly, most of our work has been in the center of the United States, the East Coast, and international, working with schools as far flung as India, Egypt, southern Mediterranean of Europe. Just got back from Bangkok, Thailand, working out in the Pacific, in the Marshall Islands, in American Samoa, and here in Hawaii, just to name a few places.
Awesome. Thank you for setting that context. That really, really helps, because I can, like I said, I guarantee anytime I forget to ask that question, I always hear about it. So appreciate that. So then now help us understand then, how does the work of PEAK work? So I'm that school in Bangkok, or I'm that school in the middle of Nebraska, and I'm intrigued by this and I want to run down this, be part of this journey with you. So what is the work going to be for me, and how am I going to activate?
Yeah, that's a super insightful question about activation. So I mean, I would encourage listeners to check out reimaginelearning.ca/survey. I can put it in the show notes later on. People can just click on it. It's fun. It's like a BuzzFeed 7-question survey that'll give you a fun indication of what decade your school is preparing kids for. As a parent, you can take it. As an educator, you can take it. Kind of like, which Harry Potter house are you? It's not meant to be scientific in any means, but it's a fun way to dip your toes into PEAK. And it kind of, it's an introduction into what decade is your school preparing kids for. It is a fun version of a serious but low bureaucracy agile assessment that we've put together in partnerships with schools, school districts, parents, students, educators around the world. We have a student version of it, a parent version, an educator version, a school leader version. And basically the PEAK process starts off with this simple self-reflective survey tool. And we look at 7 domains. The 5 domains came from the work with what school could be. Are we mobilizing our community towards a shared uplifting goal? Are our students driving their own learning, student-centered learning? Are we bringing the real world into schools and students out into the real world? What evidence of deeper learning are we finding, and how are we uplifting and analyzing that evidence of deeper learning, not just the standardized tests? How are we creating a caring and connected community in our schools? And we've added to it through PEAK, how are we preparing our kids to be future ready? And how is our school prepared to lead these initiatives, both from a formal, you know, administrative leadership framework, but also a distributive educator and student leadership perspective. So in these seven areas, the genius, the brilliance, the fun part of this process is then reflecting on that. The tool is not meant to be psychometrically validated. It's not meant to give you an A through F or 0 through 4. We do give you a score, and it's that self-reflected score. But really, the meat of it, the vegan tofu of it, is like in the reflection. Why do the, you know, high school teachers think this way about it and the elementary teachers think that way about it? Why are parents here and administrators there? Why are the fourth graders looking at it this way, but the eighth graders looking at it that way? And it's in the reflection that we're able to get the best, most useful data. We produce, an agile, low bureaucracy report, which then suggests areas of celebration and areas of growth. From those areas of celebration, we are able to confer distinction to schools in four levels, bronze, silver, gold, and platinum, depending on the number of areas of distinction and celebration that we've gleaned, and also suggest future learning, both learning that we can help provide through micro-credentials, sprints, workshops, partnership with the master's program, and also suggest other trusted professional learning consultants, providers that we've worked with if it's an area that we're not experts in. Really, the value added is the transformation model that starts with reflection, that moves to action, and then culminates in this distinction. The value added is the distinction that we're able to provide, powered by, you know, a respected, well-founded third-party nonprofit, to allow schools and school leaders who want to do this work, who have the capacity, have the desire to do it, to be able to put on their website, we are a school of distinction. We've, you know, a gold PEAK distinction model school, because so much of, you know, all of us live in neighborhoods where you go to the grocery store and there's that, you know, top 10 schools in your region, 100 schools, whatever, ranked, and it's all ranking schools on less than inspiring metrics.
Correct.
Yes, I want my kid to learn to read. I have three kids. I want them to learn to read. I want them to be able to do math. Yes, I want high attendance for my schools, but less than inspiring metrics. And this allows schools, school districts, public, private, charter, independent, international systems of schools to be able to celebrate publicly the great things they're doing that are above and beyond that.
Absolutely. I love that very much. I'm really curious then, though, as new communities decide to take this on, when you sit down with them and have those initial conversations, what surprises you?
Mm. Yeah, I'm often surprised at the amazingness. I think, you know, your listeners probably can point to 1, 2, 8 amazing things that are happening in schools. And I'm surprised not at that there is amazingness. I'm surprised that the amazingness often is in silos or bubbles that schools have a hard time systematizing, celebrating publicly, even shining a spotlight on. Again, maybe I'm not surprised in, like, I don't know that this is coming, right? Because I know it's coming. I've seen it and done it. I'm constantly surprised at how hard we, educators, Kapono school leader, Kapono classroom teacher, Kapono educator, how hard it is for us to have the time and bandwidth to publicly celebrate the amazing things we're doing.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Me stepping back, I'm like, of course, because we're putting so much of our time in to do that. And then 90% of my time last week was trying to secure the bus to go on the field trip because the bus company canceled on us. And I, you know, the two schools ago that I was a leader of, like, I swear I got a honorary degree in sewer management because, like, that was 90% of my time trying to manage a sewer system in our school. So I get it, right? So much of our time is in the daily. How could anybody expect me, school leader, me, fourth grade teacher, to toot my own horn, to, you know, spotlight and create the, you know, the public presence of that amazing thing we're doing? But when we do the PEAK process, it's always like, wow, there's so many cool things here. How do we publicly celebrate it? How do we shine it up a little bit so people outside of the education system can understand why it's so awesome? And how can we help take that one exemplar in that one grade by that one teacher, that one exemplar in that one department by that group of teachers, and help it spread and create amazing learning throughout the system?
Absolutely. So desperately necessary. Because I see that same thing, right? When I go into communities and you start those initial conversations, you know, you get bombarded very, very quickly with all the reasons why not.
Yep.
Or all the things I can't, or if only there were more time. I mean, it's a long list, and you and I both experienced it. And I'm sure most of our listeners, they've bumped up against it as well. And the reality is, yes, those are all true. But, right? And sometimes it's that personal choice to go full circle all the way back around to how you started this conversation about that initial personal journey, right? You know, for you figuring it out, those things. And I think that that's a piece of it as well. I always like to be mindful, Kapono, when I'm wrapping up these conversations and recognizing that people are coming to this program from all over the world with different sets of scenarios and constraints and joys, all of that rolled into one. And they're often thinking to themselves after they listen to these conversations, that's great, but you know, that doesn't apply to me, or there's just no way I can do X, Y, or Z. And I like to ask my guests, who are these amazing, innovative folks who've just rolled up their sleeves and figured it out in many ways, is what it boils down to. How do you talk that person out of the box they've put themselves in?
Oh, that's a great connection to the title of the podcast and what I see happening, right? So I think two things. How do you talk the person out of the box? One, I think that an effective change model acknowledges the legitimate reality of the box. I think you push to the edge of the box, you celebrate the amazing things happening in the box, and to ignore the box when you are a fourth grade classroom teacher, a vice principal of a middle school, a superintendent, sets you up for a fireworks show of change that poofs out later on. And you would not have titled the podcast Learning Unboxed, and I would not be working in the areas that I'm working if I hoped that people stayed in the box. So how do you talk people out of the box? I think one, you celebrate the things happening there. And two, it's about managing the expectations of change and the fear of what's outside of the box. So I'm going to put on my school leader hat for a second and say, you know, as a school leader, I have so many constituents I need to be worried about. And they're asking me to give them success within the box. I have to do that. That's my job. That's what I'm paid to do. And I know that the true frontier lies outside of the wall of this, you know, Amazon box that has come to my house, and I need to, you know, tear it open and like get out of it. But, you know, I think it is true that we've got the packing material and bubble wrap and everything around us. We've just jostled so much by our shipping experiences. We need to be able to manage that. I hope that people who listen to podcasts get something. I listen to your podcast because I consistently get like little nuggets. So here's a nugget. One of my favorite change models is the island change model. And the island change model is a typical like 10-80-10, an 80%, 20% kind of model, right? So what it says is that there's 10% of people who, when you say, I'm at this island and I want to go to that island, will jump in the water and swim because they trust you, or they're risk tolerant, or they just love it, right? Like, I just got back from this conference, peak model, PBL, design thinking, it's the best thing ever. And they'll like swim to the new design thinking island. Those people are amazing. To put all the changes on their back risks the actual change process, and 10% of your people being in the new destination is not enough. And oftentimes, I'll get to the oftentimes. There's about 80% of people who will stand on the shore and being like pretty skeptical, the inside the box people. And what this change model asks us as change managers to do is to consider what their role is, what their wisdom is, that they are not necessarily impediments to change or impediments to unboxing. They can be really powerful agents to unboxing. How might we pair them with the change-tolerant people, the risk-tolerant people, to be the navigators of the strong currents, to stand on the rocks and say, hey, there is a reef there. Watch out for that reef. Go around there. As the risk-tolerant people who swim to the island and make it come back, like greet them at the shore and say, you know, tell me about that journey and help them unpack it and ask those questions about, wow, that seemed really hard. How is somebody who's not a good swimmer going to be able to do that, metaphorically speaking? Can we have them help take data from that trip? Can their questions of are there sharks, are there currents, where is the reef, actually help the change management process? And we give them a real role in this, not a patronizing role. And so that we have how might that help the risk tolerant people not end up having a bullseye on their back? I'm thinking very clearly of somebody I worked with at Wailea Elementary Public Charter School, who was that risk tolerant person who came to me as school leader and said, man, I feel like I've alienated myself because I keep saying yes to you, Kapono. I have no more friends. I have a target on my back. And then the model says, you know, there's 10% of people left who are clinging to the palm tree and being like, this is the better island. I'm not going there. And we need to, as change leaders, worry ourselves a little less with them. We might value them as humans, but if we know and we're sure that there's another island we need to go to, at a certain point, the 80% have helped to build rafts to address the concerns that are legitimate. We can help swim them across. I can hold your hand. I can give you the kickboard. I can give you the flotation device. And if you're not willing to take that, you might be left behind on the island, and that's okay. And we can't cater to that 10% of people because kids need the experiences at the new island. So how do we unbox? I think it is one, spotlighting the successes in the box. We have to do that. We have to acknowledge that. That's part of our jobs. Two, use the island metaphor or whatever change metaphor or framework to help maximize the 10% of risk tolerance people who are going to jump in with 2 feet, and also find real helpful roles of the next 80%. And I think 90% of people, as we know, is way more than enough to get change to happen.
That was just so beautifully put. So I appreciate that metaphor so very much. So absolutely. I want to thank you very much, Kapono, for taking time out of your day to chat with us and to share your story and your journey and those beautiful insights with all of us. We will definitely put information in the show notes. Please click on them. I'm hoping that people will, in fact, reach out, get more information about the opportunity that is through the Peak School model. But thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. This has been really amazing. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin, and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.